Welcome to Kinfolk War. After nearly 2 years of eager anticipation, we're here to preview season 3 of The Witcher, which should be arriving in your Netflix feeds on June 29th. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra, uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country, and navigated the conflicts, oh, those beautiful conflicts, of House of the Dragon. You can find our Season 1 and Season 2 coverage of The Witcher in your podcast feeds.
We're very excited to catch up with our evil adjacent bays. Head back to the most boring wizarding school
ever.
And most importantly, hear Yaskier's new tunes now that his muse, Geralt, is back in the picture.
His lady love.
The Witcher Season 3 will be broken into two volumes, with episodes 1 through 5 being released on June 29th, and episodes 6 through 8 coming out on July 27th. Spoiler alert! We will be discussing in this episode spoilers from the first two seasons of the series and some light spoilers from the books that cover this season.
Verily, I say unto you, the era of adult content is nigh. The era of mage-controlled mannequin challenges gone bad. The time of Dooney's fuckboy reign under his government name. The continent drama is back, yes! With no sign of a unicorn in sight, Lauren, what is the issue? Give us the unicorn, let's go!
I'm cool about the unicorn. I just want to stay on the record for that. Like, I'm really cool about the unicorn.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it.
So we'll talk about some of the plot points from the previous season, just in case you need a little refresher. I know I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a minute.
Been a while.
You know, we had like the whole end of ongoing pandemic. New York was covered in smoke. Like, it's been a while.
Three other fantasy shows happened, you know. The Witcher actually fucking quit. It got fired. It's a whole fucking thing.
Okay, so much of the plot of season 2 revolved around the relationships of four main characters: Geralt, Ciri, Yennefer, and Yaskier. So here are the important highlights about those four characters. Geralt settled into his new dad life by doing his best to protect those that he loves. At the beginning of the season, he found himself learning how to parent Cirilla while mourning Yennefer, who he thought was dead. And Eskel, you guys remember Eskel? It was kind of like a big deal in season 2. It's like one of the major plot points, but none of us met Eskel before. Like, I think he dies in the same episode we meet him. Anyway, Geralt had to kill him. And throughout the series, he reunites with his mentor, Vesemir, Yen, and eventually Yaskier, and learns more about how monsters enter the continent. We'll talk more about that later. Yen spends the majority of season 2 without her magic. I'm not going to belabor this. We hated it.
Oh my God. Terrible. Unbelievably bad.
Which, for reasons, is depleted after she used fire magic in the Battle of Sodden. She ends up making a deal with a witch known as the Deathless Mother, later revealed to be a demon called Volafmir, to have her powers restored and her wishes fulfilled. But the only catch is that she must turn over Cirilla, which drives, you know, tiny wedge between her and Geralt.
Teensy weensy, nothing that big. It's okay. They'll get over it. I mean, especially after Vesemir tries to murk her, like, it's fine. It's, you know, whatever. What's a little betrayal when somebody's trying to murder your daughter?
Those last two episodes, the two meanest things are said to Yen, which is Ciri saying, "I don't trust you," which, nope. I mean, legit, Ciri. No reason to trust her. She tried to give you to a witch. But then Geralt saying, "I don't forgive you." I don't forgive you, Geralt. Just remember that.
No.
So eventually, Yen chooses Ciri and Geralt over herself and gets her powers back, but pays the price of losing Geralt's trust. Ciri tries to adjust to her new life at Kaer Morhen by deciding that she won't be a victim anymore, attempting to learn how to fight as a Witcher and also how to control her powers with the help of Triss Merigold. However, in the brief time that they spend together, she makes much more progress on using channeling her chaos or magic or whatever you want to call it when she's with Yen. Much of the season, Ciri is torn between navigating her new life and mourning the loss of her family and her home in Syntra.
Heartbreaking scenes, the where she like sees like she's back and she has to like, you know, in the court in Syntra. Man, rough stuff.
Yeah.
The second season also focuses much more on some of our more secondary characters, which is pretty freaking awesome. First, we'll start with Jaskier. He spent the last few months channeling his rage and his sadness into some questionably good music. Burn, Butcher, Burn is what he came out with. Not exactly Taylor Swift, but still moving up the charts in the continent. It's not quite Toss Your Coin or Toss a Coin, but still doing well. So we'll give it to it. It's grown on me. Maybe because I've longed for a new Jaskier song for 2 years. After 2 years of playing it, I'm good. He also has been smuggling elves out of the other northern kingdoms into Syntra, where they are under the protection of Nilfgaard. At the behest of the Deathless Mother, Fragilla aligns herself with Francesca, the newly minted queen of the elves. Once Fragilla, a.k.a. Franny, lover, returns to Syntra, now a Nilfgaardian stronghold. Wow, that was wild. She suggests to hold on to her power and influence eventually has to kill all the other commanders, like every single one of them except for Kahir. I mean, it's like, again, like I said, one of the craziest mannequin challenges, murking scenes ever. The scene is epically good.
I love it. I love it. No. It was one of my favorite moments of the season. Even on rewatch, I was like, this is great. What a glow up for our girl.
It's great. It's super great. By the end of the season, both Kahir and Fragilla are imprisoned by Emperor Amir. Although Francesca is a new character, she will continue to be an important one. She, too, listens to the advice of the Deathless Mother and brings her people, what is left of the Northern Elves, to Syntra to fight with Nilfgaard. Francesca wants to lead her people to hope, and one way she can do that is by delivering a healthy elven baby. Since one has not been born in many years, it's a very big point of the show.
Understand it, though, because how old was Dara when we met him?
He wasn't that old.
12?
Yeah.
They're acting like it's been centuries. Anyway, go on.
Well, maybe they don't know about Dara. Maybe Dara's on the low. Maybe
no. There's Dara and Francesca have multiple scenes in the show together.
It's fair. I'm trying to give it out. It's a fair point. We've talked about this offline. This is a fair point. All right. Francesca does have a daughter, but the baby is slaughtered by an assassin. That assassin has been sent by none other than the White Flame, Dooney the Hedgehog, husband of Pavetta, Amir, the father of Cirilla, fuckboy himself extraordinaire. And Francesca believes this to be the act of Redania, though, and unleashes her fury by murdering all the babies in the kingdom. Chilling moment on season 2.
That was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually forgot about that. And then on my rewatch, I was like, oh, that's right. She committed genocide. Like, this is a really rough ending for the season.
Oh my gosh. Smuggling, like elf smuggling, magic disappearing, like the reveal of everything, that like knowing that Amir was actually Dooney, is actually the White Flame, all the same people. The best part, one of the best parts of the season to me was Frangilla. But how are you feeling going into this next season? Like, what are you thinking?
All right. So we're just going to get this like meta conversation out of the way.
And I'm salty.
I think we both have been like a little off of the story because of the developments that have happened in the last 6 months, which is that it was announced that Henry Cavill would be leaving and Liam Hemsworth would be taking over.
You're being a little too calm in the sense of what I mean is this is nobody's fault but the DCU. This is the DCU's fault, okay?
I blame them. DCEU,
whatever, adding extra initials will not make you better. Okay? This is their fault. They pump faked on Superman. He's like, oh, I'll play Superman, and I'll play The Witcher, and I'll play Aegon. And Henry's like the dog in the with the bone. He saw his own reflection in the water, tried to grab the other bone, it's done. Now he's lost them all. And now we're getting Warhammer. Great.
That's a good summary of how we're all feeling. This has been kind of a roller coaster. The fans were really upset. Okay, so the fans have always been upset about the show. Last season, the fans were salty because, you know, whatever, they're black elves. But let me go back and just say, there were legitimate grievances about last season. A lot of the noise on the internet was about the fact that there was, you know, The Witcher was woke or whatever, mm-hmm. but like there were more conversations than that. Some of it was just about, this has veered off of the source material quite far.
100%.
I'm not going to get into the speculation about why Henry Cavill left, aside from the obvious connection to him announcing that he was going to return as Superman and then announcing that he was leaving The Witcher in such close proximity. But this has really been disappointing. It kind of like took me out of the story in a way that I wasn't fully expecting, because I really enjoyed this story. But it was just like, I haven't engaged in The Witcher ever since I heard that news. I haven't, you know, I read Time of Contempt leading into this season, but like it took me a really long time to finish it. I'm pretty annoyed by this, and no disrespect to Liam Hemsworth. Like, I'm going to give him a chance to play Geralt, but like Henry Cavill is Geralt of Rivia. Like it's a really disappointing development.
It's like, you know, pulling a Dario with Danny. Like, it's the same. It's like, you can't do that. Like, switching Dario was one thing. It was a little, took me out of the freaking story for a second, but eventually the new guy was okay. I liked him. But like,
or how about Tommen playing a random Lannister, like a couple seasons before he became the king?
It's rough. It's rough stuff. And this level of visibility to it makes it really rough. I almost wish that they would change their mind. I almost wish that now that he's not playing Superman, they would just be like, you know what? Let's think about this. Maybe we just stay the course.
Yeah. I don't think that would be a good look for Liam Hemsworth. And I think they've already made a commitment there. And I don't think Henry is interested in coming back. The other thing too, that before, when the announcement was initially made, there were people that were speculating that this was just related to the physical demands of the job. The reason that Witcher season 2 took so long to come out is Henry got hurt, you know, like, mm-hmm. He is the same age as me. So like, your body is not the same as it was when 10 years ago. And I think that like, that could be it too, that it's mm-hmm. just a physically demanding job. Like, anytime you're on a set with horses and swords, even when you're not doing your own stunts, it's going to be more physically demanding than, you know, a set where a lot of it is a green screen.
No, I get it. Let's just do what the DCEU does, and let's just make it a multiverse, and then it fixes it. Fixed it. Sorry. Salty with them.
You want to bring The Witcher into the DCEU?
I don't. I don't want to do that. There's already enough problems. Already enough problems. They're launching movies that just duds. Like, The Flash was here today, gone tomorrow. There it is. Flash.
All right. So I think we got that off our chest.
Yes. Maybe.
It might come up again.
Look forward to it bubbling back up. Yes, exactly.
But maybe let's talk about the story and what we're looking forward to, and, you know, what we're concerned about, because I have some concerns too. So I think we're both feeling hyped, right? After they released that 2-minute clip or whatever, we were both like, okay, we're back in.
It was the first time I got excited. Like, it was the first time in a while. Like, you know, because we've been talking about offline, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, let's just do this season, and then that's it." But I'm like you said, I love this world, so it was like, it was like literally the first time I was like, oh, when I saw the clip, I was like, oh, especially the scene with the fighting. I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing. So like, yeah,
it looks really good. Now I'm excited to see Yan Girl and Siri fighting together. Yeah. It looks really good.
Me too. And I think like what also excites me is that there's a lot to this world besides, like, I think it's easy to get caught up in, yes, Geralt is leaving, but what I like is that Netflix seems fairly committed to building this world out, like the whole world, mm-hmm. with Blood Origin and the cartoons. And so there's a lot of room for them to add other pieces and dimension and colors to the world. And it seems like they're doing that. And we're obviously going to cover Blood Origin in the break between the two installments of this season. But it's really cool to see them doing.
Yeah. And I'm hyped about the fact that there's Witcher games in development. Very exciting.
Very, very exciting.
Very exciting. I believe there's still two Witcher games in development. They're very hush hush. We don't know mm-hmm. exactly what they're going to be about, but I think it's going to be exciting and cool. Like The Witcher 3 is one of the best video games, period. Like just really great world building.
Yeah. Maybe they'll like make it like, some sort of like augmented reality VR type of thing too, which would be really dope to like actually be immersed in the continent. Although the continent's
No. If you play The Witcher 3, you don't want to go to the continent.
Yeah, the continent's not a very great place. I was thinking it midstream as I was saying it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's this quote at the end of I think it's in the beginning of episode 8 of season 2. When Yen and Geralt are talking about Valafmir, mm-hmm. and Yen is like, everyone on this continent is miserable. And I'm like, that's true.
Like, totally very accurate. Very, very accurate. Oh my gosh. So let's talk about season 3. I mean, season 2 was largely based on Blood of Elves. A lot of parts of it are on Blood of Elves. And the third installment in the series is Blood of Elves, but we don't know what to expect, like as far as book events in season 3. Like, I'm not really sure, because it looked like we were talking about this, and it looks like that actual clip that they released looks a lot like a scene in Blood of Elves.
Yeah. So this scene, I think this scene is both of our favorite scene from Blood of Elves, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it is a standout. It's standout writing from the book. I said there would be light spoilers, but listen, guys, like, this is one part of the book, but it's also the voiceover that Geralt is giving in the trailer about neutrality. Mm-hmm. So Geralt and Ciri have this, like, almost like a side quest to this place called, I think it's Sharawed. It is a elven ruin. It used to be like a castle. And because in the clip that they released, which is really cool, if you haven't seen it yet, you should go check it out on YouTube. There are all these like statues behind them. I think that's where this fight is taking place. Mm. In the book, they have this exchange about neutrality, which is so important to the core of Geralt's character, and to the point where I almost wish that this quote about being what neutrality means, what survival means, and like what the difference between like being neutral and completely like turning your back on events happening mm-hmm. around you. I wish this had come earlier in the series, because I think in the show we're not really clear like what's going on with Geralt until probably episode 6 emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like they tell us multiple times he doesn't feel emotions, that he doesn't care about anything. But then he has this moment where he decides to go back to Syntra. I think that that's what is happening in this scene. They're visiting these elven ruins. Yen is not with them in the book. She's obviously with them in the show. And they encounter, it looks like a bunch of factions, right? Like, yeah. Reince is there. I think they're fighting elves. I know they're fighting elves because there's dialogue that tells us that's what's happening. So there's multiple factions who are looking for Ciri, who attack them or have tracked them to this place. Cool thing is the dwarves are with them. And More Yarpin for us.
Yes.
One of my favorite characters.
Yeah, I love Yarpin.
I'm also really glad that they introduced his character earlier, because now his character feels like a part of the team.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be an exciting scene. I think it's going to come early in the series. I'm just speculating because we haven't seen anything yet, but I think this is going to be pretty early in the series. It wouldn't surprise me if this was in like episode 1 or 2 or 3.
I think what I love about the scene in the book is how Yarpin really breaks down the conflict between magical beings and humans, how he talks about the history of it. I hope that makes it into season 3. I mean, we won't go into detail of it so that if it does, it won't be totally spoiled, but he does like speak a lot about the history. It gives you context. I love, and we can say this because I don't know if she's going to be there. I know Triss is like sick in like the back of a wagon during this moment when they're traveling, which is why it comes up, because he's denying his service and his sword to a general that Yarpin's in the service of. And so I think that it's really interesting to kind of like see where they kind of mix that in with the stuff that is going to come up from what I think largely this season will be about, which is the events in Time of Contempt.
Yeah, I think so too. But I do think that they skipped so much critical stuff from Blood of Elves that they're going to try to fit most of it in here.
Yeah.
I had listened to our wrap-up episode, and Sloan, who is a Kinfolk lore contributor and like our resident expert on this particular world, mm-hmm. had mentioned like that it was problematic that some of these things got like cut because they're really important to the plot. And it wasn't until I read Time of Contempt that I realized just how important they were to the plot. So yeah. I think they're going to try to clean up some of that. Sloan had said she would have preferred if they had kind of split the season and done all the events of Blood of Elves and then done all the events of Time of Contempt. They kind of mixed them up. Like, remember when I was reading, I called you and I was like, I feel like they did use some of Time of Contempt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to reserve judgment. Like, if they manage to clean some of that up now, I'm cool with it. Like, I don't have a problem with it if we get it eventually. The Time of Contempt stuff is going to be pretty intense. It's an intense book. I'm looking forward to it. But is there anything else from Blood of Elves that you're in particularly like looking forward to seeing?
I think there's a lot here that I don't know how they do anymore. I think they put some of it in, like you said, put some of it in the previous season. I'm really not interested, not so much Blood of Elves. I'm interested in how they work with the Yen-Geralt relationship, mm-hmm. in the sense that they're not really together a whole bunch in Blood of Elves early on, and they kind of have gotten them back together here, like in a moment that I guess it makes sense for the story on the show, but I think it's interesting. I'm going to be interested to see how they play this out with the dynamics of their relationship, and what they do with Triss's character is really interesting to me too, because it's very different how both of these people are being used.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Triss has almost the same role in the show as she did in Blood of Elves, but not quite.
Yeah.
I think they need to clean up some of the mistakes that they made. Like, this show has been very action-packed, and that's been great for people who entered the world through the game.
Yeah.
It hasn't been as focused on character relationships, which is frustrating because we know these people care about each other, but we don't really know why. Like, yeah. I don't really understand why Yen and Geralt are like together. Well, not together.
It's the wish.
Okay. I'm going to spoil the video game a little bit. If you don't want to hear this, skip 30 seconds ahead. There's a point in the video game where Yen asks Geralt, like very point blankly, like, do you only care about me because of this magic, or do you care about me like for real? And I always found that point like beautiful, because he says for real, you know, like there's real emotion behind it. It's not just that he, you know, made this, that last wish with the djinn. I don't think the show has shown any reason beside the wish and beside like them being very attractive, magical people.
Yeah.
Of why these two are connected. And it's frustrating because Geralt has had more screen time and more relationship development with like almost every other character who he has a relationship with. We see him, well, I mean, he spends a whole season with Ciri almost, but like we also have spent significant time with him in Yaskier. And so when those two had their fight in season one, it felt like something significant. Like, oh my goodness, these two who have been together these last few episodes, who like Yaskier was there for the Child of Surprise thing. Like they have history. To see Yen and Geralt blow up each other, I think that's episode 6 of season one. And then like he spends the rest of the season kind of looking for her. It didn't feel right. So I'm hoping what we get to see is like a reset here. How are they going to show us some of those quiet moments? And I think in the trailer, we see some of that. Like we see Geralt watching Yen teach Ciri how to ice skate, you know, like these, these like family moments. And, you know, Lauren looked like kind of like the internet lost their stuff when Lauren Hisrich, the showrunner, had tweeted a picture of all three of them. And it was like the family. People were like, yes, finally, we want to see this part of the story. We don't just want to see fighting monsters. And
yeah, that's been a criticism of her. That's been a criticism of her of like, does she really understand the relationship part of the two of them? And I'm hoping, I mean, it seems like she loves the book, seems like she loves the source material, but I think that's been a big conversation on the internet, at least about like, at least like early on of like, and I know, you know, Sloan and I have had this conversation, and I think you guys have too. Like, does she really understand Yen and Geralt's like relationship? Like, is this going to land where this ends? Because we know where it ends in the book. In the book series, kind of here, we don't want to say too much. And it's like, is this going to land the same place? Because it doesn't seem like she's going that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main problem is that she doesn't really understand Yen's character. Yeah, and agreed. So it's hard to write, like, why Geralt and Yen are so, like, obsessed with each other and love each other so deeply when you don't understand Yen. One thing that I do like that she's done really well is she's developed this relationship between Taseya and Yen in a really believable, beautiful way.
Agreed.
So I just want to see that. Like we know that these writers can write really deep relationships, even in like a small bit of screen time. Like think about the amount of screen time that Ciri spent with Mousak. But like Mousak looms large over this series as a father figure to Ciri.
Less Vilgefort this season.
Oh, right, Jesus. We'll get to the Vilgefort thing. I don't even
less of that, like for sure.
Yeah. But like I just hope she can, like, I don't want to say she, because there's more than one writer on the show, even though Lauren Hisrich is the showrunner. But like I hope that the story, the writers can spend some of that important time developing the relationship between Yen and Ciri, which is developed in Blood of Elves, and Geralt and Yen, which is developed in the short stories. So I would just like to see some of that on screen. It doesn't have to be a whole episode, but I'll take some quiet moments over like being on the run the whole time.
Yeah.
Because then you start to ask, like, why are these people so committed to each other? If you don't know, you don't have that foundation and basis.
Yeah, especially since they're getting into the more, I would say what is more of the linear portions of the story. Like, I think it was hard. I think there should have been some context given to viewers that a lot of season one had to be the way that it was because of all the short story pieces and bringing in game pieces. And in season two got a little bit more linear, so they cleaned up a lot of timeline stuff. But I think, like, I think the early jankiness of the timelines made it hard to hold on to clarity around relationships that matter, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think they're still recovering from that. So hopefully this season they'll really get their footing under them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the main thing, the fatal mistake is unveiling that Yen and Geralt have a long-term relationship in dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. ever since they made that error, I don't think they've really recovered from it. So I think they're aware and they will course correct. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that. Should we talk a little bit about like the shift in the like the actions of the novels?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, so like Blood of Elves is about, I mean, it's actually about a lot of things, but one of the main things for our main characters is that Geralt is trying to protect Ciri from who he believes are mainly political actors.
Mm.
The whole book, and this was true in the show too, they used most of the stuff from Reince. You have this rogue sorcerer chasing Ciri. He tortures Yaskier to get to Ciri. He will kill people to get Ciri. Like he that's how the book goes down too. Like
mm-hmm.
not much difference there. It is kind of alluded to in the book that like maybe that's coming from one of the kingdoms, you know, mm-hmm. like is that the sorcerer's been tasked to get Ciri for political reasons because she is the heir to the throne of Syntra.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a very valuable asset, right? Like if you can get your hands on her, you can marry like your son to her and your son becomes a king of Syntra.
And turns out Nilfgaard too? Like
yeah, but no, no one knows that at this point.
No, nobody knows that.
But yes, it turns out
she's double fisting kingdoms. It's amazing.
Cirilla is legit the most important person in this entire continent, which is I always find funny. I'm like, how no one else is this important? Like,
yeah, it's wild.
Just this little girl. So at the end of season two, we get this notion that she's being hunted by also the Brotherhood of Mages, which mm-hmm. is thanks to Triss Marigold snitching. Still mad. And the Wild Hunt, which is this otherworldly like group of ghouls that are chasing her through dimensions.
Shows up in the trailer.
Yeah, I mean they are in the Time of Contempt as well. Like this is a main all the video game folks know that like this is a main antagonist in the video games. They're not as big of an antagonist in the books, but like I think we're getting to a point where there will be a transition where Geralt and Yen will realize. I think this happened at the end of last season, but I think it's going to become even more intense. That Ciri is wanted for both of these facts. One, that she is the heir to the throne of Syntra, the lion cub, mm-hmm. and she can claim that kingdom back. And two, that she is a source, that she has access to this magic that is different from what the sorcerers and mages are using on the continent. So I think that this season will, even though they're like really hyping up the Wild Hunt, I think they will be there, but they won't be the main antagonist. I suspect that the fact that the elves are after her, because, you know, evil adjacent mm-hmm. Bay Isdred snitched to them, that the Brotherhood of Mages is also after her, thanks to Triss, and that the kingdoms, the northern kingdoms that are fighting against Nilfgaard, and we'll talk more about who those players are. I think that like it will become clear that everybody on the continent is looking for this little girl because she's magical, because of her lineage, all of that stuff.
Except for Istrid. He's looking for Yen. He's like, you know Yen? Yennefer?
Yenna.
Yenna? Yeah, exactly. This guy's having a Yen off, him and Geralt.
I met one of your dear friends. It was a great line.
Oh, God. It's good. It's very good, especially after the context, the dear friend's context of the letter that Sloan gave us. It's pretty epic. What do you think about?
One thing that I want to just warn everyone about. This is, I'm not going to spoil it. There will be heavy losses. We're going to need a really big bottle of booze. We're going to be pouring one out for our homies like on every single episode. Like,
get ready. Get the good stuff.
There are likely going to be heavy losses because in the book, there's like a lot of people die. I don't know if they'll actually kill all of those people in the show because some of them, I think, haven't done what we need them to do and they have purpose beyond their book character. But there's one that I'm particularly dreading that I definitely think they're going to do.
And we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there. We'll leave it there and we'll go to the magic. We'll go to the magic. So we talk, you just mentioned her being a source, Siri. What do we know so far about Cirilla's magic? We know that Cirilla's mother, Pavetta, also had powers that she struggled to control. We know that Siri is a child of elder blood, or the Lara gene. So we're thinking and believe that this means that it comes from her ancestor, Lara Doran. Blood origin kind of delved into that a bit. We'll cover that. So we won't go so deep into that, but you should go watch Blood Origin. It has a lot of little nuggets in there that will be interesting. I wonder how they're going to play off of those that were presented in this season. But what else do we know?
So the show, I think, it's a little hard to parse this because obviously you and I both know things from the books, things from the lore in general, and the video game spends quite a bit of time on this too. But from the show so far, it seems to be confirmed that she is a descendant of Lara Doran, who was a warrior elf who married a human mage, which outraged the entire continent. Everybody was pissed off. Mm-hmm. Lara carried a special gene called Elder Blood. And in the show, this is a show only thing. They've made the connection between the Elder Blood and the Witcher mutation, but like that's a blood origin thing. It kind of came through in the scene in season two where Vesemir and Triss are kind of trying to parse out like, why is Ciri different? Could Ciri potentially help create more Witchers, like all of that stuff? But then it's explained, I think, a little bit more in Blood Origin. Mm-hmm. There are these two prophecies, though, in the world. And the show, I feel like, has done a better job than the books of kind of parsing out which one really applies to Ciri. Well, one is a prophecy, one is a curse. So I think at this point, we all are aware of the verily I say unto you.
The error of the sword and axe is nigh.
So we all know that initial prophecy, which Ciri spouts out in season one, and then we hear another version of it in season two. But then they also keep talking about Falca. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about Falca, so you should go back and listen to previous episodes. I think our wrap-up of season one and maybe our preview of season two. Falca was a queen who led a rebellion and died burning at the stake. And she swore all of those who did her harm would suffer at the hands of her descendant. It is actually possible that Ciri is a descendant of Falca, who was also a relative of Lara Doran, who also may carry the Elder Blood gene. The show has, in my opinion, definitively said that she is a descendant of Lara Doran. So I think we can assume that the Falca stuff is not important. However, I do think it's interesting that the show keeps bringing up Falca, who is this like looms large over the continent, just because I think that was the last time there was such like real bloodshed in the Northern Kingdoms.
And they're kind of giving us a Falca vibe with, with a little bit of like what Francesca's doing. They're giving us a little bit of like that energy. I'm not saying that she is the same, but I'm saying like they're trying to like, there's a little bit of like, kind of, I would liken it to like what the realm does with like Damon and Maegor. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Is what I, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's fair. I mean, we had Stregobor spout like 5 minutes worth of propaganda saying that Yen might be like Falca, you know, like there's
trash from like the very first frame of the beginning. He's like getting children to do his dirty work, like right from the beginning, from the beginning, trash.
Yeah. Stregobor's awful.
Yeah.
Every time I see him, I cringe. He's terrible. I don't even know if he's in like Blood of Elves, but he's just all over the show. I can't stand him. So I just think it's something worth keeping an eye on, because I think that the show confirmed, in my opinion, that Lara Dorne is Ciri's great, great, great grandmother, I believe, is how far back she's removed. But they keep kind of hitting this Falca drum. So I think we're supposed to think of both Lara Dorne and Falca, and both of them are like badass women warriors.
Yeah.
Who, in my opinion, Falca was 100% right. She just, you know, went a little bit too far. She went very, Daenerys Stormborn on everybody.
Allegedly. We don't know what happened with Daenerys Stormborn. They never really told us, allegedly, okay? She burned up shit for reasons, like a bell. Like, that's it. That's all we know.
So, like, but Falca was fighting for her crown, which had been taken from her, basically, because her father remarried. Like, that's not cool. So, I think a lot of us would say Falca probably was in the right. Maybe she shouldn't have, like, murdered everyone in her family and then, like, torn up the northern countryside. Anyway, the show is like trying to keep her in mind. So I think that's some foreshadowing for sure, because they've spent too much time on this story about Falca for us not to have her like in the back of our minds.
You know what everyone on this show needs to do? Get like Dora the Explorer and find yourself a map. All right, you're gonna need a map of the continent for this season. If it's anything like A Time of Contempt, there are a lot of locations. You want to hit them with some of the locations, Andrea?
My goodness, do I? All right. So the most important locations are the Northern Kingdoms. I don't now that what's his name? Amir. Now that Amir is at Syntra. I don't think we'll be traveling to Nilfgaard. Like, I don't think that's going to be a thing.
It's a terrible place. I'm glad we're skipping it. I mean, really, when you think about all the places you could travel, I'd much rather, like, the Bahamas. Like, anyway.
Listen, I can't get, like, Calanthe's description of Nilfgaard out of my head when she was roasting that Nilfgaardian prince who came to ask for Pavetta's hand.
Yeah.
Just, like, it must really be terrible. Like, I don't, you know. And then she said that thing about like any army I can smell, like
I love
Calanthe. Like what? We lost her too soon. So
100%.
All right. So we got Irden, Caedwin. I don't know if I'm saying that one right. Redania, Temeria, Lyria, and Rivia. Lyria and Rivia are actually one united kingdom. Redania is led by King Visimir, not King Vesemir. That might be confusing. May have been good to change the names, but I think they just went with the like House of the Dragon. Everybody has the same name, Damon, Aemon, whatever. Anyway, I digress. Redania is led by King Visimir, who employs Dijkstra. Our man, we love us some Dijkstra.
You love yourself some Dijkstra. I'm not sure yet. I'm 50-50. I know we love Grant. We love Grant McTavish for sure, but I'm not sure about this guy.
Okay, that's fair. I am letting my love for Grant McTavish just like, I'm like, fine, whatever. If Dijkstra's a villain, I'm going to rock with it. Like, I don't really care. I love Grant McTavish.
I do. He's great.
But Dijkstra's also dope in the game. So I'm letting all that stuff like color my ideas of Dijkstra. Much cooler in the game, by the way, than Eskel.
Huh.
Anyway.
Maybe they should have went there, because I don't know what Eskel was doing here. Anyway.
And so then we have Temeria, which we also know about, which from King Foltis. Temeria is a kingdom that we visited in, I think, episode 3 of season 1. That was the one with the Striga. King Foltis is trash, like straight trash. But anyway, he did come to save the day during the Battle of Sodden Hill. So we will give him a little bit of a pass for that, but we don't really like him. Erden is led by a king named Demavend. I don't know much about. I'm not from the show. I know much more about him from the books, but I don't know where they're going to take his character. Caedwin is the kingdom closest to Kaer Morhen, so it's one really important to the Witchers in general. King Henstelt is the king in the books. I don't think we've met him yet in the show, maybe, but I don't think so. And then finally we have Lyra and Rivia, which are led by Queen Maeve, who is definitely in the show. So I'm excited to see if any of these characters, most of whom we met last season except for Foltis, play like a real role in the show going forward. Like, we had a few scenes with Vizimir talking to Dijkstra about what he wanted and the intelligence and the politics. But we haven't really gotten to know any of the other royals very well, aside from, that episode with Foltis. So I think this will be interesting to see if they let the politics play out more coherently. Cause I'll be honest with y'all, in the books, the politics doesn't make that much sense if you're not following it super closely. Like, it almost needs its own book so that the politics stuff can breathe outside of like the magical elements and the politics is like both like regular real world type of politics, who's up, who's down, like, mm-hmm. you know, whose border is where, who, like, which kingdom is respected and for what reasons. Obviously Calanthe was the most like respected and powerful of the monarchs in this area. But then there's also the magical politics, like what's happening with the Brotherhood of Mages. There's been some speculation if they're going to introduce another magical grouping. I don't want to spoil anything, but there was an interview that if you want to see it, you should go Google. Where they talked about, will there be like another magical grouping of people that are against the Brotherhood, or maybe a separate faction from the Brotherhood? So there's just a lot of like politics to unpack. And the show, I felt like in season 2, made it extremely confusing. In season 3, we should understand this. Nilfgaard is now in Sintra. It is now in the north. There is going to be fighting around that. Mm-hmm. Like, they cannot let him just take over one of their kingdoms and like live there. Like, they're going to have to fight back. And I think we're going to see the fallout of Amir's arrival in Sintra and the fact that Sintra has become a real stronghold in this season.
I mean, additionally, what's their next play though? Like, what do you think their next play is going to be?
Nilfgaard's?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that Dooney. You know what? Let me call him Dooney. I'm not calling him Amir anymore.
No. I'm with you. He's a hedgehog.
Yeah. Let's call him Dooney.
Sonic.
So Dooney is pretty smart, right? So what he did was evil. He had Francesca's child killed, but he made it. He knew maybe that she would assume it was going to be the Northern Kingdoms because she was under Nilfgaard's protection, and the Northern Kingdoms are the ones who are out here gathering up all of the magical people and committing genocide. So she obviously took her people, who are now battle trained, and left Nilfgaard to wage war on the Northern Kingdoms. They're basically free agents now. They're not going to attack Nilfgaard. They're going to attack the Northern Kingdoms. So now Redania is fighting a war on two fronts.
Yeah, it's smart. It's definitely smart. I mean, we'll see, because Redania seems to have leveraged some spy activity that we'll see. We'll see how it plays for Dooney, our boy Dooney. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, my concern about all the kingdoms, the mapping, the politics is I'm cautiously optimistic, like Atla fan seeing, you know, screen grabs from the set. You know what I mean? Like, I'm cautiously optimistic in the sense that it can get very, like, we're already having a hard time tracking storylines and relationships. And then if you don't clean that up enough to make the political pieces and the different areas seem really clear, you can get turned around and where you are on the map, how far things are. It can take you out of the story. Like, remember, like, I'm thinking more about, like, yo, how did they get to where Ciri and Yen were so fast when they were over here? And how did they get back to Kaer Morhen from where they were so fast when they were getting chased, because there's this much distance? So you start questioning those things. So I'm kind of hoping that they can make sure that they establish the map more clearly and the players in each of those kingdoms more clearly, so that those political things have more tension. That's my hope.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. The political stuff, I think, is a little bit less interesting, and that's why it doesn't get much play on the show. But it's important that we understand as an audience that the whole continent is in chaos. Like, it's in chaos politically. It's in chaos with, you know, actual chaos magic. We haven't really talked about the monoliths, right? So there's these, Geralt discovered when he went on his little side quest with Isrid, that monsters come out of the monoliths, that they are portals to other dimensions. And Cirilla is the one who's activating them, right? Intentionally, unintentionally, whatever. She clearly was unintentionally activating one when Geralt and Isrid almost got eaten by like some kind of dragony thing that came out. So in addition to fighting the elves, fighting Nilfgaard, there might just be like monsters popping up that no one's seen before. Half of the Witchers got killed at the end of last season and they were already diminishing. There's no way to make any more. So it's just like, this is everything that's facing the continent. And that's why I think it's probably a terrible place to live. Like, imagine like war, famine, magical creatures attacking you, and monsters.
Yeah. It's, sounds pretty terrible. Oh, I mean, if you don't already live on Earth, that would be a terrible first place. Sorry. Let me say, I just think that I'm most excited to hear the next joint from Yaskier. That's my most exciting thing. He's been through a lot. I feel like he's going to have a hit. I feel he's got a hit in him. I feel like there's something else.
They have to. Like, this is like a feature of every season, right? He's got to have a hit song.
He's got to have a hit song. And I think it's going to be a good one. We weren't
feeling his last song, it clearly like was popular because
it cut through. Yeah,
because when Yen, obviously his music slaps, because when Yen was speaking to Philandria, who she never met before, he was like, "Oh, you're the woman from the song."
Yeah.
No, it was the other way around. Yen heard Yaskier's song and she was like, "You were the elf king from the mountains." Like, but obviously people singing his tunes. So have a new one.
Shoot, it almost got him passage on the boat. You know what I mean? Like, it was cool. Yeah, no, he's definitely out here in these streets. It's definitely resonating. Let's talk about some of the stuff you want to talk about some of the stuff we're looking forward to, maybe a little bit?
Oh yeah.
Like Philippa not being an owl for the entire season?
Oh god. Guys. That whole transition was wild.
Yeah.
Upon rewatch, it's even crazier. Because you're just like, there's like whole scenes where Dara is talking to this owl. And then like at the end of the show, they're just like, oh, the owl is a person.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. It's kind of wild. I did not see that coming. I didn't see it coming. Now going back and reading and watching, you understand. But I did not see that coming when I first saw it. I was like, huh?
I knew who she was, but I was like, they're going to have to explain this. And then they just didn't.
Yeah.
So hopefully we will see Philippa, who is gorgeous. Like, the actress they cast it is beautiful. I would like to see her in human form more often. That would be great.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. I want to see, does Frangilla get to a redemptive kind of like space? Like, do we start saying, yeah, Frangilla, you're not as terrible as we once thought you were. Maybe we go back to like the part where we were kind of on the fence when she was in magic school, when she was in like born Hogwarts, maybe even beyond that. Maybe she becomes more of like a heroine in the story. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. Like, I'm interested to see what they do with her character because I really like her character and I want to see, even for all the crap we give her, I want to see what they do with her.
Yeah, me too. I think that Kahir is almost there to be like the anti her. Like, he was kind of growing on me when he was on the run with Yen. And now I'm thinking that one of them will get a redemption arc and the other won't. I haven't finished the book, so I actually have no idea what happens to either of them. I know what happens. Like, I know what happens to Frangilla from the video games, but I don't know anything about Kahir. But I would love to see them both get some kind of redemption arc, more so than what they've had. Because, like, I think what we've seen of Frangilla is that she's become more of her own person. Before, she was just taking orders, and literally everyone talks about her like she has no brain of her own. And she is quite fanatical. And then at some point she takes like control, right? But now that the person that is like the center of her fanaticism has imprisoned her, I'm curious about, are we going to see her realize that Dooney is trash, or is she going to try to get forgiveness? Like, I'd love to just see like where they go with Frangilla and Kahir as well. Cause this will be the second time he's imprisoned.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any hope for Kahir.
I kind of feel like Kahir is like maybe a little bit beyond redemption. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Frangilla is as well. Like, she killed a bunch of other mages so that she could fight her own people. Like, you know, people she grew up with. So I don't know. We'll have to see if they can, at the end of the day, it needs to serve the story. Is it important for these two to get a redemption arc? Maybe not, but I'm all for it. Like, I would love to see these characters we've spent quite a bit of time with get a redemption arc.
I mean, I'm also like here for Ciri going through what, you know, the full arc of teenage and teenage life, including experimentation with certain things that she's going to experiment in. And we'll just give you a little hint. Think Sokka and Momo for you Atla fans, tasting a little bit of cactus juice. You know, cactus juice in the desert. I mean, legitimately, she's going to do some experimenting with some, pharmaceuticals, we'll say.
Yeah, in the book, I'm not sure it's like consensual experimentation, but it gets really trippy. I mean, I think that's the only way to put it, where there's a significant portion of the book where I was like, is this real or is this a dream? I can't.
Yeah. Not for
real. And I'm still not sure. And you, if they put this in the book, in the show, you will know what we're talking about. There's no way to think that, like, to miss this part if they incorporate it. I actually have a suspicion that they might skip it or condense it.
It makes sense.
I do want to just say one thing that I'm super interested in seeing that is, I meant to mention earlier, but I forgot, like the squirrels.
Yeah.
So the, I think it said Scotiatel, which is in Elven, is squirrels, are super important to both the books Blood of Elves and Time of Contempt. They are mentioned in passing, not by name, by Francesca in season two when she's talking to Philandriel. However, they're not really featured in the show. I think that Francesca is going to become the leader of these, like her elves are going to become the squirrels. They're super important because they're like this guerrilla, like, group of magical people, but they're also really important because they're important to Ciri's story in the future. So I think we're gonna meet like them, maybe we've already met the characters, but the notion of this like group that operates like kind of in the shadows and is just like, again, messing stuff up for the Northern Kingdoms. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. It's really important to Ciri's story and her character development. So I hope Lauren didn't take a shortcut here.
I wonder when these guys get together, you know, the writer of Game of Thrones, the writer of The Witcher. I wonder if like George walks in and be like, I got a great name. Brotherhood Without Banners. And he's all like, ah, fuck that, squirrels. They're so fucking similar. I mean, in the way how you describe them, that is just like, if you just listen to that, you'd be like, oh yeah, terrorizing guerrilla warfare like in the Northern Kingdoms. Also,
totally. Nice. And they're kind of, I'm really glad you brought up the Brotherhood. They're kind of like a Rorschach test for whose side you're on.
Yeah.
Right? Like both groups believe that justice is on their side, that they're righting the wrongs. But both groups kind of ran through the squirrels maybe not so much, but like the Brotherhood ran through the Riverlands and like also did some shady shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they're an interesting group to compare. Again, we don't know if they're even going to be included. The squirrels are going to be included in the show. I hope they are. It will be interesting to see how how the writers parse out like what justice means to all these groups, you know, like mm-hmm. Francesca's people have obviously been wronged. Mm-hmm. The Northern Kingdoms have also been wronged. Nilfgaard is wrong, but they think they're in the right. Like all of these people think that they're 100% right. And then we have our main character stuck in the middle of all these conflicts, trying to navigate them. And I'm not sure like who I think is right. I honestly don't care. I just want my favorite characters to make it through. You know,
yeah,
like that.
100%. Yeah.
Like I'm not going to be in out here on like on Facebook with House of the Dragon being like Team Black. Like I don't.
Yeah.
I just want Geralt and Yen and Ciri to be together. And if Yaskier can, you know, be Ciri's like funny uncle, I'm cool with that too. Like that's all I want is for those main characters to like make it through. So all of these other conflicts that they're navigating are like interesting to think of from a bigger story level. But I'm here for these characters.
Let's get the family out alive. Let's get them out. Well, we're almost there. Just like not even what when but not even a day away, and yeah, it's dropping, so
I'm hyped.
I'm
really excited.
We will be covering the first installment of the season, then Blood Origin, then the second half. So, you know, let's spend some time together as we go to the continent. You know, reach out to us, KinFolklorePod on Instagram, KinFolklorePod on Facebook. You can hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com and all the places where you listen to your podcast. You know, leave us like some ratings and tell us what you think. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everyone.